From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, while the state budget is due April 1st, it's the federal budget in Washington that Governor Cuomo warns might impact money for schools in New York. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on the budget wrangling this week, and New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman responds to President Trump's executive order to roll back the Clean Power Plan. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo warned this week that the state might not be able to add more money for schools this year sought by the legislature because of uncertainties in Washington over federal funding. As the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, with the budget deadline April 1st, Cuomo also offered an alternative this week, a straight extender bill that keeps spending at current year's levels.
Just before the state budget is due, Cuomo is urging the legislature to give up on their proposal for additional spending for school districts beyond the $1 billion increase that the governor recommends. He says there's too much uncertainty over federal funding right now.
I don't want to be in the position where we pass a budget today, we tell a school district, you're going to get $600 million, and then ask the legislature to come back after we get walloped by a bad federal budget. Ask the legislature to come back, revise the education budget, and tell that school district, whoops, I'm sorry, you didn't get $600 million, you only got $400 million. And then the school district says, well, hold on, I hired teachers, I made all these plans. It would be chaos.
Cuomo says the state can handle modest increases in the budget, but not dramatic ones. So the governor says he does think New York can still offer free tuition at public colleges and universities. He says the price tag of $163 million is just a fraction of the $160 billion spending plan.
Well, we're going to make that right this year.
And the governor also told a cheering crowd of direct care workers for the developmentally disabled and their clients that he will put $55 million in the budget, $10 million more than the legislature initially proposed. It will allow the not-for-profit agencies to comply with mandatory increases in the state's minimum wage and result in a 6% increase in pay over the next 2 years.
This hand will not sign a budget unless there's $55 million.
Cuomo also continues to raise the possibility of the governor and legislature approving simple budget extenders that essentially leaves all other levels of spending in place until more is known about federal cuts. He says he and lawmakers really have just two choices right now.
Let's call it cautious financial outlays that could adjust to certain federal cuts. Obviously, if it's over dramatic, it's going to blow the budget anyway, but they could adjust to certain federal cuts or just go the extender route, which says, let's continue the budget, plus or minus, and then when we actually find out what the revenues are because the federal government passes its budget, then we have facts, and then we pass a full budget.
The extender could last as long as 6 months. The federal budget is due on October 1st. The governor also claims that there's agreement on two non-spending items in the budget, raising the age that teens can be treated as adult offenders in the prison and court systems to 18 and allowing ride-hailing services like Uber and Lyft to operate outside of New York City.
There are still I's to dot and T's to cross, but we have more than a conceptual agreement on raise the age.
But Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie denies that there's agreements on anything, saying all the spending and policy items are connected, so there's no agreement on any one proposal until all items are settled.
Progress has been made on a lot of issues, but when all of these things are interconnected, if an issue that's largely important to either us or the Senate or to the governor, it's not been dealt with, then there's no deal.
The speaker, following a private meeting with the governor, did not say whether he agrees with the proposal to limit school aid spending or whether the assembly would sign on to a budget extender until more is known about potential federal cuts. A spokesman for Senate Majority Leader John Flanagan says he can't confirm that there are any agreements on the budget or the related items. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Surrounded by minors at the Environmental Protection Agency, President Donald Trump this week signed an executive order that suspends, rescinds, or flags for review more than a half dozen measures that were part of the previous administration's plan to curb climate change. One of the most controversial measures, a concern to advocates in the Northeast, is a rollback of the Clean Power Plan. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley has reaction.
In 2015, New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman led a coalition of 25 states and municipalities in a motion to defend the Clean Power Plan, which forces coal-fired power plants to cut their emissions pursuant to the Clean Air Act. An injunction has kept the plan on hold while a decision is pending from the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. The executive order issued by President Trump would begin the process of dismantling the plan. Schneiderman says he will, quote, aggressively oppose in court President Trump's actions that ignore both the law and the critical importance of confronting the very real threat of climate change, unquote.
Given the case law and various Supreme Court decisions, we're very confident that the EPA cannot simply dismantle the Clean Power Plan and leave nothing in its place. It has to have regulations in place on greenhouse gases. And one way or the other, we're going to ensure that that happens and that they meet all applicable standards. So we regret the fact that the president is trying to dial back history, but it's not going to happen.
Adirondack Council spokesman John Sheehan believes the executive order will hurt the environment and economy of the Adirondacks.
The Adirondacks would be hurt by increased carbon emissions that don't get controlled and by an increase in acid rain that would surely come with any relaxation of the carbon regulations.
Adirondack Mountain Club Executive Director Neil Woodworth says the executive order gives a free pass to the major sources of CO2 in the Midwest that are sending their pollutants east.
New York and New England states cannot stop the flow of air pollution from the Midwest. So this takes away a powerful tool that the Northeastern states had to ensure that we basically stopped those air pollutants and moved to a cleaner future.
On the House floor Tuesday, Vermont Democrat Peter Welch vilified the executive order, saying the president is relying on false science and false economics.
Some of the best minds of the 18th century apparently are advising President Trump on science matters. This planet is melting. We've had the worst wild weather in centuries, the three hottest years on record. Let's not deny what's before our very eyes.
The Electric Reliability Coordinating Council is a utility advocacy group. Spokesman Frank Masano notes that plants have not changed operations to conform to the Clean Power Plan because it never went into effect. He sees the order as a way to curb over-aggressive moves by the Obama administration.
Clearly, what this executive order does is roll back the regulatory overreach that the previous administration had seen as their only path to achieving gains on these environmental issues. They didn't have access through legislation, through Congress, which is where really this process belongs.
President Trump has called climate change a hoax and criticized the Clean Power Plan as an attack on American workers and the U.S. coal industry.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, this is budget week. It's a deadline of Friday at midnight for the April 1st usual budget. And as usual, the wrangling going on near the deadline. Some things have agreement in form, like raising the age for incarcerating young people as adults, Uber upstate, and free college tuition at public colleges in New York. At least those three we're hearing have some form of agreement. Otherwise, Governor Cuomo out this week talking about education funding and the issue, not this budget, but the federal budget in Washington. And its impact has got state lawmakers worried about where the numbers will be.
Well, that's right, David. Remember the background on all of this. You got a big problem in that the legislature is furious with Cuomo because he didn't give them their raise, and his so-called independent commission followed orders and obviously and said no raise for the legislature unless, of course, they came up with a face saver for Cuomo, which was tough ethics reform. And they were not about to do that, and that included the idea of putting a cap on how much money they could make on the outside, as we say, with quotation marks around it, meaning because they were legislators, there were some of them who were being hired simply because of their political office. If you don't believe that that stuff goes on, well, then you ought to take an anti-stupid pill. And now the legislature itself, therefore, David, is in no mood to be very nice to Cuomo. And yet, the one thing that they are held responsible for every single year is the budget on time or isn't the budget on time. And somehow, both the governor and the legislature know it's good for them to get the budget done on time. And that's what we're seeing. And my bet is that they'll find some way to get it done. Now, Cuomo is calling for what's called an extender, and that means that you just keep going with what you've got. But that means that the schools don't get the inflation aid that they need. I mean, after all, they're giving their teachers a little extra money. They're giving their administrators the price of fixing their buildings goes up. And so education becomes a big part of this. And the big fight, of course, is that the Assembly wants more aid to education, a lot more, and the Senate only wants a little more. And these people know that the people on the school boards, who are often the people who run next for political office, will be on their cases, and that is something that they don't want. So the chances of getting something done there, David, were pretty good. And also, you have to remember that Trump is sitting up there in the White House, and that Andrew Cuomo is making noises about running for president. And there is no question that people think that he is going to run for president. And if you're Trump, you don't want to help him. So you got a Republican Senate, and that's where you want to put your pressure if you're a guy like Trump, to make things as tough as possible for Cuomo. I suspect that's what's going to happen as we go forward. So the budget itself is one of those things that has to get done. It has been done one way or the other. And, you know, much ado about nothing, in my opinion.
On Monday, Governor Andrew Cuomo wrote an op-ed for the Daily News, Alan, talking to specifically the GOP in Washington after the failure to get a vote on the health care plan, the GOP health care plan, to replace so-called Obamacare. Now we see that there is a new poll out, and of course the speculation is that Governor Cuomo may be positioning himself for a run for president, and the new Quinnipiac University poll, though showing he has a high approval rating in New York, shows 53% of New Yorkers do not think the Democrat should run for president in 2020.
Yeah, this is kind of traditional stuff. I'm not a great big Cuomo fan, as people probably know. But it's pretty early. So what happens in a campaign is that once somebody gets a nomination, people pile on. They come on one way or the other. Right now, for example, there are a lot of people who think Pete Bharara, the fighting U.S. attorney who was summarily fired by Donald Trump, should run for governor, and he could win a primary against Cuomo. Doubtful, in my mind, that it's going to happen. Cuomo is thinking about being president. We are all sure of that. And if he does, then there'll be a vacancy then, and that would be a good time for Pete Bharara to do it. But polls are showing many people don't even know who he is. So once he starts to run, they'll know who he is. Same thing with people who think Cuomo shouldn't run for president. They'll come on when the time comes.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A state senator from New York's Hudson Valley introduced a bill this week that would give the state greater authority to identify and protect wetland areas. He says the legislation is crucial given the apparently reduced role of the Federal Environmental Protection Agency and potential evisceration of some of the nation's water protection rules. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn reports.
Democratic Senator George Latimer says his bill would allow the State Department of Environmental Conservation to protect freshwater wetlands as small as 1 acre, including smaller wetlands that are adjacent to water bodies or those that are deemed to be of significant local importance. Current law provides state wetlands protections for those 12.4 acres and larger, and those found to be of unusual local importance by the DEC commissioner. Here's Latimer.
While I filed the bill before seeing some of the direction from the coming policies of the new EPA under Scott Pruitt, I think it's pretty obvious that the federal government intends to get out of the business of protecting our environment. So I think New York State has to step up to the plate, has to put some regulations in place. Wetlands, as we know, are the natural filtration system for our groundwater, and water that goes into the Hudson River, water that goes into the Long Island Sound, if polluted, will pollute those bodies of water.
The White House budget includes a 31% funding cut to the EPA. Dan Shapley is Water Quality Program Director for Riverkeeper.
Protecting wetlands is vitally important to protecting water quality and mitigating floods and a number of other important goals that we have. And we particularly like to see a focus in areas that are used for drinking water.
Latimer's 37th district includes communities along the Long Island Sound in Westchester County.
I see in an everyday context in communities like Rye and Mamaroneck and Larchmont, New Rochelle and Portchester, the pressures that there are to develop on the waterfront. Waterfront property is desirable. People want to build homes or condos, a combination of retail and a variety of different developments. And those developments have to be environmentally sensitive because Long Island Sound, and for that matter the Hudson River, is are bodies of water that really belong to all of us.
He does expect opposition to the bill.
I assume that there'll be some development opposition to this. It will face an uncertain future in a climate where people are thinking more about the dollar and cents cost of everything and not always the value of certain things. I think we'll be able to make a strong argument that the overall impact of this is a positive impact in terms of economic development. But in the narrow sense, there are individuals that would like to develop right on the waterfront, and they might find this a problem for them.
The bill also would update the state's wetlands maps, most of which are more than 20 years old. Latimer says the maps do not reflect how development has affected New York's wetlands. Latimer says the bill would look out for the Hudson River, Long Island Sound, and water bodies all over the state.
This includes the Great Lakes and Lake Ontario and Lake Erie. It includes the Finger Lakes. It includes Lake Otisauga and places in the upper Hudson Valley that lead into the Adirondacks, in which in every one of these cases, our pristine environment is part of our economic development. It's part of our tourism. It's part of the growth of industries like the wine industry, which has to have access to the valleys around the Finger Lakes. So environmental protection is not just soft-heartedness. It's hard-headed, intelligent economic development. And so I think if we protect against the wrong kind of development, then we'll maintain these bodies of water for the right type of growth and the right type of usage.
Long Island Democrat Steve Englebright sponsors the bill in the Assembly, where he chairs the Committee on Environmental Conservation. A DEC spokesman says the agency typically does not comment on pending legislation. Reporting from WAMC's Hudson Valley Bureau on the campus of Vassar College,
for the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Government officials are reacting to the latest federal threats to claw back funding earmarked for sanctuary cities. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has that story.
New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman and Albany Mayor Kathy Sheehan are among those keeping tabs on President Donald Trump's order to cut off federal funds to sanctuary cities, loosely defined as municipalities that do not cooperate with federal immigration enforcement. Schneiderman has emerged as an opposition force to the Federal Justice Department headed by Attorney General Jeff Sessions, issuing and updating legal guidance for sanctuary cities within the state, weighing in on how New York municipalities may continue sanctuary city practices while not running afoul of new federal policy. Monday, Sessions put states and local jurisdictions on notice. They're expected to comply with federal law.
Failure to remedy violations could result in withholding grants, termination of grants, and disbarment or ineligibility for future grants. The Department of Justice will also take all lawful steps to claw back any funds awarded to a jurisdiction that willfully violates 1373. In the current fiscal year, Department of Justice's Office of Justice Programs and Community-Oriented Policing Services anticipates awarding more than $4.1 billion in grants. I strongly urge our nation's states and cities and counties to consider carefully the harm they are doing to their citizens by refusing to enforce our immigration laws and to rethink these policies.
Schneiderman responded in a statement saying, quote, despite what Attorney General Sessions implied, state and local governments and law enforcement have broad authority under the Constitution to not participate in federal immigration enforcement. Mayor Sheehan is concerned that the administration is portraying sanctuary cities as being dangerous and unsafe.
If you look at cities across the country, they're safer because we have developed a level of trust within our community that if somebody calls the police for help, that we're going to come and we're going to assist them and that we're not going to serve as pseudo-immigration officers. The federal government is responsible for enforcing immigration laws, and that is their role, and that is not the role of local governments. And if the Trump administration wants to make it the role of local governments, then it's, you know, yet another unfunded mandate.
The Washington Times reports that nearly 500 jurisdictions across the country consider themselves sanctuary cities, among them Syracuse, Rochester, and New York City. Hudson joined their ranks last week, its Common Council passing legislation making the designation official. According to the Journal News, last year the state received $218 million through the Office of Justice Programs. Speaking for Albany, Sheehan says it's not clear exactly what funds Washington would pull.
This is an administration that has released the skinny budget that people are talking about that already removes most of the funds that cities like Albany really rely on and that our communities, particularly our underserved communities, rely on. So we're going to be fighting to keep that funding in, whether we're a sanctuary city or not. And it's really, I think, does a disservice to our immigrant community, many of whom are here perfectly legally, but who live in fear because of the target that they've become. And it's very concerning. We don't want people living in our community in fear. And that is why, again, it's really important to recognize that there's a federal role to be played here, and then there's local law enforcement. And we want to make sure that our local law enforcement officers are here and are representing and are seen as a resource to everybody in our city. It helps to keep us safer.
Schneiderman has vowed that his office will continue to ensure local governments have the tools they need to legally protect their immigrant communities. Monday night, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio sent a tweet saying, "The Trump administration is pushing an unrealistic and mean-spirited executive order. If they want to fight, we'll see them in court."
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1713. Or just listen or podcast on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at this same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.